You've often been told that you need to write or call your elected officials, write testimony, and show up at the legislature. In short, get involved in the process of government. But the popular idea that greater citizen participation makes government better may need something more. Two senior fellows at the Brookings Institution say your participation can be effective only when it's augmented by the work done by institutions. Our contributing editor Neil Milner joins us now for The Long View. Hey there.
Hi.
Now, a lot of people may be bristling at the idea or even just the notion that more citizen participation is not necessarily a good thing. In fact, that it could be even problematic, as these two researchers suggest, and that that's not the solution to better government. What do you tell them?
Well, if they bristle, they haven't been paying much attention, and they're still captivated by the folk theory of democracy myth that we've talked about before. Look, for 25 years at least, all kinds of research has shown that the assumptions we make about voting and about people's interest in politics is not only wrong, but is essentially counter to the way we're wired. And some of this research is really based on path-breaking Nobel Prize-winning studies of political psychology. We don't have to go into those now. But that's part of what's going on here, that there isn't this reliance on individual participation and the rationality of the voter and the voter's interest in politics, which has been one thread of political reform for many years, is just that, one thread. It hasn't worked very well. There's always been another thread in our democracy that was very important in the Founding Fathers, and that is the preservation of and making institutions what they call intermediary strong. And that's what they say needs more emphasis.
For people who think institutions stronger, when already they're looking at it with a fisheye, What's the argument that says that these institutions, these intermediaries, in fact, work better in the public interest than people who simply rise up, come together, as we've been seeing for the past several months?
Well, here's the deal. It's understandable that you would look at this with a fisheye, and certainly the argument that the Brookings people make is based to some extent on projecting out. But here is the argument, basically. We have institutions that have been limited over the years in the name of reform, and that we've gone too far in that direction, so that Congress is full of extremists because political parties don't have as much power to mitigate the ideologies anymore. We elect people to the presidency who get the nomination, like Donald Trump, because we've now relied on the direct primaries more than we have before. It's unimaginable that if you did the old kind of nomination process that someone like Trump would get the nominee. In the name of giving people more access, we've also increasing the opportunity for certain kinds of people to give more money. It's more of a complex argument, but the important thing to understand for them, bottom line, is to take into consideration the possibility that the kinds of directions we've used for reform, the emphasis on transparency, the emphasis on taking power away from political parties and putting them in the hands of individuals. All the things that sound really good, and in fact were really good. We may have reached the point where we have to start thinking about strengthening these intermediaries, two kinds of intermediaries. Political intermediaries, professionals, and substantive intermediaries. That is, get away from this distrust of elite and understand the role that expertise needs to play, because, in fact, experts mitigate some of these problems.
And yet they're also sort of pointing fingers at some of the so-called experts, some of these citizen good government groups that we traditionally look at as being out there in the public's interest to make that position known. I'm thinking about the League of Women Voters and Common Cause. Why point fingers at them, too?
Because they've been, to some extent, victimized by and perpetuate the kind of emphasis on transparency and the emphasis on the power of voting. Now, I want to be very careful here. These two guys don't say these are unimportant. They say they've gone too far and we have to focus on other things. The good government groups are not experts in the sense that they're interested in experts. They're saying you got to bring professionals back into it. Take global warming, for example. Global warming requires a level of knowledge that is quite complex. It requires professional notions and requires expertise. Global warming, the climate change issue is totally on the other side of the spectrum now. It's essentially a political issue with mostly ideology, not very much concern about scientific information, and no legitimate intermediary organizations that can deal with it. Congress is a disaster on this one because it's the upshot of what's happened to Congress over time.
If, in fact, we go back to some of our previous conversations about how we are hardwired to look for agreement, what makes it any better for these professionals to act in the public interest and not also be seeking agreement?
Well, no, it's not. In fact, their advantage is they're seeking agreements. What they argue is that one of the things that professionals can bring to this thing, they bring two things. They bring real expertise. And this is an interesting argument, people who really have to make the policy and have to do so in a kind of non-political, non-partisan manner will reach out to others and will bring in more opinions. They say one of the things that's happened now is that special interest groups of all kinds have undue influence in the political process. If you give more control to these mitigating institutions or these mitigating people, they're more likely to build kinds of coalitions and take into considerations and even bring out hidden interests. Look, I'm not ready to defend this thing as biblical, but I think that it's worth considering, and that's where they end, that you need to consider this other half of the equation.
So what I hear you saying is that some of these special interest groups have become so fragmented that they don't really have the opportunity to build a broader coalition in the way that perhaps a professional might.
I would put it this way. There is very little incentive and all kinds of disincentives to build those kind of coalitions in today's politics. And so politics, if you think about it, one of the difficulties that the Democratic Party has now is to build coalitions of different kinds of groups. So it isn't just that they don't have it isn't just that they don't want to. It's very hard to do so. And so one of the reason is that, say, political party officials, people who are involved in things or subject matter experts have sort of disappeared from the scene. The distrust of elites and the belief in the power of the people, both of which are kind of the essence of populism, not just Trump populism. They're not just talking about Trump populism, but just the essence general of this emphasis.
And it's worth emphasizing that this paper by Jonathan Rauch and Benjamin Wittes was done before.
Well, the paper may have not been done before it, but they've been writing about it.
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
Right. Rauch has written about this before. He's been concerned. It doesn't take much to see that one of the problems over the past umpteen years has been gridlock and has been a kind of ideological overload and not getting anything done and a sort of extreme polarization. And so he's been writing about how you act as intermediaries to reduce
I guess
that.
My point is this isn't in response
oh,
to
no,
Trump
Oh, no, it's not
populism.
In response
it's
to
something
it.
That they've been doing for a while.
Yeah.
And we're going to post the paper, which is called More Professionalism, Less Populism, How Voting Makes Us Stupid.
Very
and what
readable
to do
paper.
About. Very readable. Came out last week, and we'll have it posted for you on our website.
There'll be a test on it next time I'm on.
Okay. Fair deal. Thank you, Neil.
Sure.
And Neil Milner taught political science at Manoa for 40 years and is the contributing editor of our biweekly segment, The Long View.